I'm Don Machholtz, and you are listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 30 for the week of July 29th, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmachholtz.com. That is spelled donmachholz.com. Two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, July 29th, the moon is 70% full and moving toward full phase, which will occur on August 3rd at 4 p.m. Universal Time. The bright moon will make it difficult to observe those three comets converging in the opposite side of the sky. But we will do that anyway. Wednesday, August 5th, will probably be the first evening these comets will be visible with the moon out of the sky, as on that night, August 5th, the moon rises 2 hours after sunset. Comet Neowise and the other comets in the evening sky will be discussed later in the podcast. The moon passes south of both Jupiter and Saturn on August 1st, on its way to becoming full 2 nights later. In the morning sky, near the beginning of the week, the Southern Delta Aquariid meteor shower will still be active in our morning sky until the moon interferes later in the week. The next major meteor shower to come along is the Perseids, which peak August 11th to 13th. But the third quarter moon will be in the morning sky, hampering that shower somewhat. We will discuss the Perseid meteor shower more next week. Will you be able to see the International Space Station this week? This week, we have 5 zones. If you live north of 50 degrees north, the International Space Station will be in your evening sky for only the first few days of this week. Then it will be absent for the next 2 weeks. So Canada, Ireland, Germany, that is you. Get out there and see it before it self-isolates from you. From 30 through 50 degrees north, and that is much of the United States and Italy and Turkey and Japan, the International Space Station will be in your evening sky for the whole week. And then it disappears for at least a week. Move south a few hundred miles and you will be at 20 through 30 degrees north, where it will be in your evening sky beginning midweek and extending into next week. From 20 degrees north through 35 degrees south, you won't be able to see it at all. Okay, no International Space Station. Don't worry, it will be back in your skies next week. New Zealand, for yet another week, it is in your morning sky all week long and into next week. To determine where it will be in your sky, go to the website heavens-above.com and enter your location, then click on ISS. Teaching and Sharing Astronomy. Most of us involved in astronomy, and you need only look up at the nighttime sky to be involved in astronomy, have the desire to share the sky with others. I discussed public and private star parties in podcast 11 through 13. That is where we set up our telescopes and invite others to look through them. These star parties attract a wide variety of people. At one end of the spectrum are those who have a casual interest and simply want to see something like the moon or Saturn through a telescope, and feel no need to buy one for such a view, something like going to a movie. They can say, been there, done that. It satisfies a curiosity. On the other end of the spectrum are those who have a deep and serious interest in astronomy and not only want to see the sky, but get to know the astronomers and watch how they go about finding and describing celestial objects, with the intention of this becoming part of their daily and nightly life. You see them at most of the star parties, and eventually they may become one of you, an astronomer showing the sky to others. The star parties serve those purposes well. The astronomers, that is the host, as we called them, do not need to teach. Their job is to find and describe the astronomical objects they already know so well. In podcast 24, I discussed my work with the Placer Nature Center, one-night classes with both a lecture in stargazing. I talked in podcast 24 how you can do these too if you are so motivated at your local nature or science center. The next step, and I find that many amateur astronomers do this, is to teach at a local college. How you are credentialed depends upon your state and locality. About 15 years ago, I approached Sierra College, a junior college based in Rockland, California, about teaching astronomy there or working on their staff. I have 2 2-year degrees, but no 4-year degrees. And at that time, I was lacking the upper level courses that were needed to get the credentials to teach at a junior college. That was unfortunate, as the staff had already set aside 2 classes for me to teach, one on Tuesday evening and a second one on Wednesday morning. If you have teaching credentials and want to teach astronomy, check around at the local educational institutes and see what you can do. Another way to share your knowledge is to teach in a non-credentialed setting. I did that for about 10 years at Sierra College at their Grass Valley campus in Northern California. It was in their adult education program, also known as continuing education program. These classes are generally held on campus at night. They cost much less than regular college, and this one costs the student about $80. They are set up by the college, and there are no tests, no grades, and no college credit. They are for people who want to learn more about a subject, not someone filling a seat to get credit towards a degree. If you are so inclined, you can teach these too. I know that most establishments, due to the virus, are not presently meeting in person for classes, but it takes a while to set up such a course, so now would be a good time to start planning. I do not think that distance learning, that is, for instance, by Zoom, works well for this type of class. It is so much better in person. I took over the class from an elderly gentleman who had taught it for a few years, and I set about assembling the new curriculum. What I devised was a series of 6 classes, 1 per week, on Thursday evenings, 7 to 9 p.m., 1 set of classes in the fall and 1 in the spring. The first hour was usually lecture. The second hour was spent observing at the college's observatory area. We did not use their main observatory telescope. It was for CCD use only. But we did use the college's assortment of amateur visual telescopes, including some old C8s stored in a shed next to the observatory. This is how I organized it. I had a lot of handouts most weeks, and each week I had a star chart for the upcoming week. Week one was the introduction. I showed how to use a star chart, points on how to observe through a telescope, and we laid out the solar system, the first four planets by size and distance scale, and we had to go outside to do that, followed by an overview of the stars and galaxy. Then we went out, and I pointed out some stars and constellations, and we observed a few things through a telescope. On the second week, everyone brought a pair of binoculars if they had one, or they borrowed one of mine. We learned about optics, how binoculars worked, about magnitudes, distances to objects. We learned about stars, double stars, clusters, nebula, and galaxies. Then we went outside, and together, using binoculars and a laser pointer, located and observed about 10 targets, which were bright stars, double stars, clusters, and even a galaxy or two. The third week was also scheduled around first quarter moon. On week three, we met not at the classroom, but at the observatory with no formal lecture. Everyone brought their telescope if they had one, or borrowed one of mine or the college's. Each person, for the next 2 hours, then stood next to their telescope as we demonstrated telescope optics, finders, eyepieces, and telescope mounts. As the sky darkened, each person located, and we worked together on this, a dozen objects beginning with the moon. After we got the moon, each person looked through each of the other telescopes to see what views are available through telescopes other than their own. On week four, I handed out star maps for the morning sky, and we discussed the other half of the sky. And I encouraged them to get out and observe the morning sky sometime that week. We also learned about right ascension and declination. We then went out and observed with our telescopes. On week five, I demonstrated how the planets go around the sun and the view of each planet from the Earth. Then I discussed specific double stars and deep sky objects, and I printed out a star map for a couple of the faint objects requiring star hopping. Then we went out and star hopped with our telescopes. Week six was our final week, and I discussed upcoming astronomical events, the meteor showers, the planet positions, and astronomy projects that you can do. Sometimes my friend George Robinson would come in and talk about the Astronomical League and the programs they offer. Then we would go out and observe the sky. We had a seventh week as a backup in case a class was canceled due to snow or a power outage. Often during the seventh week, I invited the class a few at a time, and they could bring one guest each to my house to observe from my roll-off roof observatory. These classes were successful and taught hundreds of local residents observational astronomy. We did not get into cosmology, dark matter, dark energy, or black holes, but mainly what one can see up in the sky and how to use binoculars and telescopes to observe, and how the universe is put together. That is what people wanted to know. My class size reached 24 students rather early, and near the end, after about 10 years, before I moved away and handed the class over to another amateur astronomer, attendance decreased to the minimum required, which was 6. This might be because we saturated the area with astronomy instruction, although some students came from 90 minutes away to attend the class each week. My students' ages range from 14 through 80, and some students took the class several times. Each week, rain or shine, the class was held. And if it was raining, we would not go out to observe for the second hour, but I would present 2 weeks of lectures or give one of my astronomy talks on the Messe Marathon or comet hunting. And when the sky was clear, if the International Space Station or an iridium flare was visible, we would take a break from the lecture and step outside to see it. Many of you can do that too. It is not hard to set up, and most junior colleges and some high schools do have a continuing education program. Now let's talk about comets. The positions in right ascension and declination for all five comets mentioned this week are available on Podcast 27, Comet Positions. All five comets are also shown on Podcast 30, Map 1. That comet Neowise did well. The brightest comet in years, widely observed and photographed. You might have seen a decrease in the social media about this comet, as the comet has faded and now the moon is in the sky. Nevertheless, it is still observable, and cometeers, both amateur and professional, are sifting through tons of data to better analyze how this comet behaved and why. This is what we know. It attained naked eye visibility for almost the whole month of July. That is a long time, but certainly not a record. Comet Neowise showed two tails, many comets do, and each had its own anomalies. The dust tail showed strata, or layers, seen only in a few comets. The gas tail showed some yellow color in images and some structure of its own. The color of the gas tail appears to be caused by lots of sodium in the comet nucleus. Four other comets remain in our evening sky. Comet Lemon, C2019U6, is at about magnitude 9. Comet C2017T2 Pan-STARRS, which we've been watching for the whole year, is presently magnitude 10. Comet 2P Encke is magnitude 10 and dimming. Finally, Comet 88P Howell is magnitude 10 and slowly brightening. Now, I'd like to refer to Podcast 30, Map 2, which you can download free from my website. I have been discussing this over the last few podcasts, and finally it's about to happen. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll get to see for ourselves the convergence of three comets in the northern evening sky. On the evening of Sunday, August 2nd, comet C2017T2 Pan-STARRS and comet C2019U6 Lemon are within a degree of each other. Each is about magnitude 9 to 10. The bright moon will be in the opposite side of the sky. One hint is to keep the moonlight off of yourself, your telescope, and the eyepiece while looking to the northwest for the best view of these two comets. Even though these two comets appear to be close together as seen from the Earth, comet Pan-STARRS is 204 million miles away. That's 325 million kilometers. While comet Lemon is about half that distance, 109 million miles, or 175 million kilometers. Comet Neowise is approaching these two comets, and on August 3rd and 4th, it passes by M64, Again, the moon will be a problem. And on August 6th, check this out before moonrise, Comet Neowise passes right by globular cluster M53. Again, refer to podcast 30, map number 2 for these three comets. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode number 30 for July 29th, 2020. I'm Don Mockholtz. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmockholtz.com. That is spelled donmockholtz.com. Two H's. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss what's going on in the sky. We will continue observations of the comets in the evening sky. We'll learn a new constellation, and we'll discuss the Perseid meteor shower. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.